Clerk will call the docket.
Avant Chavez Hamed against Commonwealth of Virginia. Joseph R. Combs, City Council. Mark R. Herring, Attorney General. Trevor S. Cox, Acting Solicitor General. Matthew R. McGuire, Acting Deputy Solicitor General for the Appalachians.
You may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Joseph Pope, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Hamed. This court in a gun v. Commonwealth found that the Virginia Tort Claims Act applied to an inmate's tort action seeking a damage recovery. In a gun, this court examined three statutes. First, Section 8.01-243.2, the inmate statute. Section 8.01-195.7, the VTCA statute of limitations, and Section 8.01-195.37, which told the notice filing requirement for bringing a claim under the VTCA. The court found that the VTCA statute of limitations applied, and by operation of Section 8.01-195.7, and the tolling provision of 8.01-195.37, the inmate's claim was timely. The AG conceded, the Attorney General rather, conceded in that case that if Section 8.01-243.2 applied, it would impliedly repeal the tolling provision in Section 8.01-195.37. The AG notably withdraws that concession here and argues that the tolling provision applies only to Section 8.01-195.6, essentially arguing that the court erred in a gun by finding that Section 8.01-195.37 operates to toll the limitations specified in Section 8.01-195.7.
May I ask you this? Do you see any distinction, or is there a distinction between the written statement in 195.6 and the notice of claim in 195.7?
No, Your Honor, there isn't. And 195.7 actually references back to the written requirement in 195.6.
So the notice of claim is it's really just another way of saying the same thing. There's no separate document, no separate notice. It's just the same written statement mentioned statute earlier.
Exactly, Your Honor. Exactly.
Can I follow up with that?
Absolutely.
Why does 195.7 repeat that? Why didn't they just say, why do they have to repeat the statement that's clearly in 195.6?
Well, Your Honor, I think that is just a question of perhaps just a in this statutory scheme, I think it's common that sometimes there are overlaps that just happen. I think the U.S. Supreme Court has made clear that that's not an uncommon thing. I think if you look at in the context of the Bankruptcy Code, in the context of other large statutory schemes, including the Federal Tort Claims Act, there are overlaps that are within those provisions. And the Supreme Court has said that there is no problem with those overlaps so long as there's no conflict or repugnancy between those provisions. There is no conflict or repugnancy here. It's merely restating. And one Supreme Court case, United States v. Borden, the court said a mere overlap between or among statutes is not enough to show that one of them is meant to be exclusive over a given subject matter. One of the statutes may be merely affirmative or cumulative or auxiliary. Then I think the best way to look at this is to say that the restating of that is simply cumulative. The Commonwealth argues here that the one-year notice requirement in Section 8.01-195.6A is distinct and serves a different function. It argues that inmates must accordingly satisfy the notice requirement in 195.6A and the notice requirement in Section 195.7 to assert a claim against the Commonwealth. Thus, by operation of 195.6A, an inmate will have additional time to submit a claim for settlement to the Attorney General's office, even though the inmate will be barred from bringing that action in a court by operation of Section 8.01-195.7. But a claim is an action that may be brought in a court of law. It is hard to fathom any situation in which an inmate would submit a claim to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General would settle that claim if there was no possibility that an inmate could assert that claim in a court of law. I can't think of any party that would do such a thing. That would simply be an act of charity. And no party I can think of that I have ever represented would ever do such a thing. And so I think that would create an absurd result, which is also a maximum statutory construction that this court has time and again recognized. In sum, Mr. Ahmed, in this case, filed his claim timely. The tolling provision of 195.37 operated to toll the period for him to file the statute, to file his notice of claim. He filed that notice of claim timely, and he should be permitted to go forward and file his claim and have it heard by a court of law. I'll respectfully reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Matt McGuire on behalf of the Commonwealth. This case asks what is seemingly a straightforward question of, is the one-year notice filing requirement in Code Section 8.01.195.7 tolled while an inmate exhausts the prison administrative grievance procedure? As the Court has already pointed out and has been discussed this morning, the real rub in this case comes from the fact that there were 2 one-year notice filing requirements in the Virginia Tort Claims Act.
Well, the question is not are there two, but is there one repeated twice?
That's correct, Justice Kelsey, and so there are 2 responses on that. First, the statutory text and the history of legislative enactments under the VTCA have always kind of set out Code Section 801.195.6 and Code Section 801.195.7 as substantively distinct statutory provisions targeted at different concepts. And so the one-year notice filing period came in at the same time in 1984, and then the tolling provision got added in 1989. And so in some sense, it's either they were the same thing when they were enacted, and then the tolling provision essentially rewrote the code section 801.195.7 so that it no longer really imposed a separate one-year filing requirement because, as Your Honor pointed out, there's a much simpler way to write the statute of limitations provision.
And you say they're targeted at different things. What are the 2 different targets? They appear to be the same target.
Well, they both target that you need to file a notice of claim within 1 year, but they do serve different purposes. Code Section 801.195.6, the notice of claim there, does, in fact, open up 2 different avenues to an inmate. The Attorney General is authorized to settle a claim under Code Section 801.195.5, and it also allows, if every other aspect of notice of claim is satisfied, all the other requirements, to file a lawsuit.
But respond to counsel's point that you're never going to settle a claim if you can't file a suit.
So, Justice McClanahan, it's outside the record, but I can represent to the court that we have recently settled a claim where there was a different time bar issue that came up that was asserted by Demur in Goochland Circuit Court, where it was ultimately settled with the inmate for approximately $22,000. Where we raise the statute of limitations type bar, but didn't settle the claim. There's always inherent litigation risks, even if the claim looks like it's time barred. We still have to go through the process of arguing about that in court, convincing the circuit court that we're right, and then potentially
appealing. So you only raise the issue of statute of limitations.
That's correct, Justice McClanahan, but it hadn't been ruled on yet, but we had an argument that it was time barred, but still nonetheless settled the claim.
Well, until we rule, you might have guessed right or you might have guessed wrong. So the claim was a perfect claim for a debatable case.
That's right.
But as soon as we rule, if we were to rule in your favor, there's no more guesswork left. You can just say, forget it. I don't have to pay you anything, ever.
In some sense, that's correct, Justice Kelsey, but they would still have the right, if they have otherwise complied with the requirements of the notice of claim statute, they would have the right to file it still in court. We would still have to send an attorney to go argue and tell the circuit court this is time barred under this court's decision in this case. You should dismiss it. There is inherent litigation risk, but I take the court's point. And I would like to walk through briefly the Commonwealth's thought process that went into this case, which really sort of tried to look at this court's precedent and looked at what the General Assembly enacted and tried to faithfully give the court an interpretation that would harmonize all three statutory provisions to the extent the court thinks that the 2 1-year notice filing periods are distinct or that there's any ambiguity in whether or not they impose substantively different requirements. And that's particularly drawn from this court's decisions in Melanson, Halberstam, and Phelan, which make clear that the VTCA is in derogation of common law, and so strict compliance with all of its provisions is required, as well as this court's decisions, such as from 1925 in Harris versus Commonwealth, pointing out, quote, that the various provisions of an act should be read so that all may, if possible, have
right,
their...
But the tolling provision isn't referenced in either 195.6 or 7, correct?
That's correct, Justice McClain.
And you want us to imply it into one and not the other?
We would say that the only way for all three statutory provisions to have full effect, if the court thinks that the one-year notice filing periods are different or that there's any ambiguity about that, is to only apply it to 195.6. Because if it also applies to 195.7, the net effect of that is that the General Assembly could have just written that every claim cognizable against the Commonwealth shall forever be barred unless the notice of claim is properly filed. So really, it does turn on whether or not the court thinks that the 2 1-year provisions are essentially the same requirement imposed twice, they are just cumulative. Or if there's any ambiguity about that, this court's precedent on the VTCA would suggest that it's for the General Assembly to correct, not for this court. And Phelan, in some sense, is an example of that, where this court had a case involving a canning facility on the grounds of a single prison. But the attorney, I guess, for the MA hadn't identified in the notice of claim the exact entity being sued. But as the court pointed out in its opinion, everybody basically knew exactly who was at issue, but the statute required them to name the entity. The General Assembly promptly came behind that and made actual notice acceptable under the VTCA, and they responded to this court's opinion. And so the Commonwealth's position just is, if there is any ambiguity here, this court's precedent would suggest that the General Assembly should come behind and correct it.
Concretely, what would an inmate have to do under your reading of the statute?
The inmate would need to comply with the other requirements of the notice of claim properly, identify the place and the people, et cetera, and then file their lawsuit within 1 year. Here, Mr. Ahmed exhausted the prison administrative grievance process within 2 months. He had a 10-month period under our interpretation in which to file his claim. And even in a worst-case scenario under Operating Procedure 866.1 from the Virginia Department of Corrections, if they got every continuance possible and took as long as they could, an inmate would still have 5 months in which to file a lawsuit. So in the sum total of this, from the Commonwealth's perspective, just was in light of this court's precedent and the general desire to try to give effect to every substantive provision in an act, was to give the court an interpretation that would harmonize all three of the provisions. And if the court accepts that interpretation, the circuit court should be affirmed. But Mr. Ahmed's interpretation is also a plausible one. I want to be clear about that. It's just it would essentially treat the 2 1-year filing periods as imposing the same exact requirement. And we think there is at least some ambiguity about whether or not they do. So unless the court has further questions, I will cede the remainder of my time.
Rebuttal?
Just two brief points, Your Honor. First of all, my colleague mentioned ambiguity, and there is no ambiguity between the two provisions. They say the same thing. So that is not really an issue. The other issue I think regarded the Department of Corrections regulations, and I do note that the handbook does provide that if the inmate follows all the procedures, there's a requirement that it be done within, I believe it's 159, 160 days. But that is merely an internal regulation that does not have the force of law. And so that really is irrelevant to this point and to the statutory construction. If there is any other, there's no other questions from the court, I just respectfully request that the court reverse the judgment below. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Call the next case.